Hey, it's Tony and Melissa. Thanks so much for listening to our podcast.
Here are some of the best parts from today's show. Hope you'll subscribe, share, and like us.
With us here this morning is Jenny Curry, professional counselor in Milford, and we speak to her once a week. Jen, how are you? It's good to have you here. How are you?
I'm good. Enjoyed my turkey.
Did you really?
I did.
Yeah.
Great.
Well, it sounds like a lot of fun. What happened after that? Did you pass out?
No, but I wanted to.
Yeah, I bet you did. Sure, we all did. All right, we're finishing up our 3-week talk on domestic violence, and we have tackled signs and have tackled types of abuse. But today we want to focus on helping. If we know someone in need, where can we direct them for help?
So I was looking online, and there's a number of really good resources. And one of the agencies and groups and whatnot that really stood out was called the Connecticut Coalition Against Domestic Violence. And they have a link that's actually, if you go to http://www.ctadv.org, there's a whole list of resources and hotlines, different places that you can call and go. And there's a link for this Coalition Against Domestic Violence. And on it, there's just a number of great resources for training and resources, publications, phone numbers, just a lot of very, very good resources.
And I guess my question to you, Jenny, is I'm sure, unfortunately, like, you know, you can't share with us, obviously, specifics, but when you have people come in, if they are themselves struggling, are there things that we can, would you say that it is appropriate or not appropriate if we were to reach out to one of these organizations? Like, say you have somebody who comes in, you know, would it be appropriate for you to reach out to one of these organizations, or should you let people know that, hey, here's a resource, you should talk to them about it?
Yeah, so I think both. I think some of it depends on how ready and willing the person is to move forward and get help. And, you know, we talked a little bit last time about how sometimes people just aren't completely ready and there's stages of readiness. But I think if they would allow you to sit there and maybe, you know, call with them, be a support, just literally next to them in whatever that they need to do, if they allow, I think that could be really helpful. But there is a point at which, you know, you can pass along the information. And I think if the person makes a lot of excuses, it's clear that they're just not ready. But if you give them the information and they want to call, or they are really open to the information that you find, if you do some research for them, then definitely it's a good thing.
I mean, I think it's kind of that concept of you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. But I think there's also kind of a little bit of a guilt factor. You know, if you sort of sit on them not being ready, or that they feel you're overstepping and you feel, okay, I'm not going to get involved, or I'm just going to pull back. Well, what if something awful happens? You know, how do you then live with yourself? I have to imagine in all of your years of professional counseling that there are people who come in and they feel guilt ridden because they feel they could have done something, but either they were too scared to, or they felt that their help was unwelcome. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that that's where, you know, you have to really just not cave to that guilt and recognize where the responsibility lies. And the responsibility lies with that person ultimately to make some changes and to get help. And like you said, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. And I think it's difficult, you know, and like I said previously, in my experience with somebody that you really care about personally, to have to go through that and to not always be able to help as much as you want to, but it's a self-discipline to not take on that guilt and undue responsibility, because that doesn't help the person either. And you just kind of have to be patient and wait in those stages of readiness.
Jenny Curry is here, professional counselor in Milford. I guess the only thing you can do is just be there if they need you. I mean, if somebody doesn't want to help, of course, like you said, there's nothing you can do. But if you keep the lines of communication open, what more can you do?
Yeah, just, yeah, that's it. You know, just pass along information. And what I found is that I pass along information. If the person is resistant, then I kind of pause. But if they're open to it and they take it and utilize it, then I'll give a little more. And it kind of just in that degree. But I've also found, though, that the one thing that you can do, right, is if there's a domestic violence situation and there's kids involved and the kids are being harmed or the parent is a danger, you know, you can also call Child Protective Services. You can also make that call on the care line like we talked about before, and really is a responsibility to keep those kids safe. So that is something active as well that you can do.
What would you say, Jenny, before we let you go, what would you say to anybody who... So I know for myself, our family is very open to therapy or going to see counselors. We're very in support of it. I think that it's really great. I think that there for a long time was a huge stigma, and I think it's becoming more and more acceptable, if you would, by, you know, publicly acceptable. But unfortunately, and I'm sure you see it a lot in your career, there still is a stigma around it. But what are kind of your thoughts into sort of gearing people towards going to see a counselor or, you know, coming to see you per se? You know, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, obviously, from your professional standpoint, of course, you want to see people and help them. But, you know, from a just a personal standpoint, if you know, maybe the route is to go one-on-one counseling, sometimes that could be kind of a little bit of a pushback from people. But, I mean, for me, if somebody suggested a counselor, I probably would do it. But I don't know if that's still kind of the case for a lot of people.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's interesting, sometimes the people who need it most, right, are the ones who are the most resistant. So I think it's always just about presenting the option. And sometimes what I find is helpful to say, you know, you can come, you can check it out. If it's not a good fit for you, no worries. You don't have to keep doing it. Or, you know, give it 3 tries, something like that. But especially for people in domestic violence situations, it's really important that they seek therapy. So one, that they know that they're not alone and isolated, and also that they can work to develop a plan, you know, with that therapist, because this is quite a process, especially if you're trying to leave a domestic violent situation, and you really need that support and direction and just the affirmation that you're doing the right thing, for sure.
Jen Curry, we've run out of time, but if people want more information, if they want to talk to you, what can they do?
They can go to my website, www.jennycurrycounseling.org, and I'm also going to be posting some things on my website about this topic.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you so very much for taking the time, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thanks. Have a good day.
It's 9:30. Do you know what time it is? It's time for the Coffee Break Chat on WICC.
All right. We have Stephanie Swantek here. She's with the Be Safe Project, and she's a manager of Bridges Healthcare in Milford. And Stephanie, we welcome you. We want to warn our listeners, if you've got little kids in the room, they may want to leave. We're going to talk about something somewhat uncomfortable for adults to discuss and definitely inappropriate for children. But you learned shocking information that you wanted to share. I think I want to leave the room. Steph, how are you this morning?
Hi, I'm well. Good morning. Thank you.
All right.
All right. So, Steph, we wanted to know what exactly you came across so that we can kind of dive into this a little bit this morning.
Yeah, absolutely. So what our, you know, again, my program, we teach sex health education within classrooms and high school systems and access to reproductive health. And so we're always doing group sessions and presentations, the one-on-one sessions with students and or their partners. And so what we've stumbled upon recently is the addiction to porn, in addition to how kids are actually learning about sexual health education is through pornography, and how it's basically it's distorting their image of and their ideas of relationships, the sexualization of women and or relationships, comparing themselves, what they should be doing, what they shouldn't be doing, their idea of consent, violence. And so just the idea of porn and how it's really affecting our adolescents.
So do you think that they're going that route, Steph, because we're coming up short as parents or grandparents or teachers? I mean, are we seeing really a surge in it? Because I have to be honest, when you look at TV shows or movies back in the day, even today, there are always these older references of 6, 7, 8-year-old boys who will go into the bathroom and take their father's magazines or whatever, like their Playboy magazines. And I feel like that reference has always kind of been around. But do you think the uptick is because we're, I don't want to say failing, but we're too nervous to talk about it?
I think we have to ask our question. That's the question we have to ask ourselves is, when is our child, if it's a toddler or a 5-year-old or a 10-year-old, when is the first time they're put there being, they have access to the internet? Because when they have access to the internet, they have access to porn. So it's more of that. That's what's changed. They actually, like statistics say that porn use has actually decreased since 2000, 50% has decreased since 2007, but it has not, because it's just more, they're not able to measure it because there's so much more free porn. And that's the scary part. It's just a click away. And the average exposure of porn is 11 years old. And 95% of in regards to like porn addiction are boys and men. The most vulnerable being between the ages of 8 to 14 years old, because there's on the internet, even video games. Video games can you know, pop-up ads, et cetera. It gives them access. It's one click away.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I have to say, as a mom of a baby, I mean, he's a toddler, but a little boy. I mean, when you hear 9, 10, 11 years old, to me, they're still babies. Those are still children. I mean, that to me is... that's really alarming, actually. It kind of takes me back for a quick second. So I guess as a parent, you know, advice for me or for any parents listening right now, how do we, I don't want to say avoid, I would like him to avoid that. I would like him to not go that route. How do I successfully, or my husband, how do we successfully guide our child when the time is right, you know, determining when do we have these conversations about the body or things like that? I mean, how do we do that? Because I don't want to know that my kid ends up being one of those statistics. I really don't.
So it's just like anything you're teaching your child. You're teaching them to play sports. You're teaching them how to treat others. You're teaching them to respect their bodies and other people. You're teaching them about the dangers of porn, of sexual health, you know, having a relationship with their body, what's real and what's not real. Because porn is not real. But at a young age, when these kids are seeing these images, they don't know it's not real. And so what is the result, and how does it impact them as a young adolescent and as an adult and their future relationships? So it's constantly having this dialogue of, this is real, you know, and I mean, this is, you have access to these things, but it doesn't mean that you should be watching it or that what you're seeing is accurate. It is for entertainment. It's like any other movie. And I was comparing that, like when you watch a movie, you know, asking them what is real, what messages do they receive from watching a movie? And then you can also have the idea of, in talking about porn, but there's the same thing. It's a movie. They're taking breaks. There's actors, there's producers, et cetera. Because that will help them stay safe and also help them to feel safe with you asking questions.
We're talking to Stephanie Swantek, who is the Be Safe Project Manager. This is out of Bridges Healthcare in Milford. And we're talking about something that is very uncomfortable, I think, for adults to kind of talk about, Steph. I know you and I were chatting briefly yesterday how there was a game that my college sister, she brought home with her. She brought home a card game. And it was kind of an adult, not inappropriate, but, you know, certainly for adult humor, if you will. And there was one card that my father picked up, and it had the word porn on it, and he immediately put it right back into the pile, because it was like, we don't talk about that in this house. And
Alan, if you're listening, I applaud you. I would have done the same thing.
Well, I mean, and I think it's probably the same in your household, Tony. That was just nothing that we didn't really talk about that growing up. But we also, you know, my brothers and sisters, we never really had that interest of discussing it. But do you think that we now live in a time where social media and things are so more accessible, whether it's streaming or it is YouTube or things like that? You know, I mean, maybe I'm being naive, Tony. Maybe your boys were like, I don't know. I didn't really hear about any of this kind of stuff until I was maybe in college. And at that point, I didn't really have any interest in checking this stuff out. Has it become more accessible? And that's why kids are finding it? Because at 9 or 10 years old, I don't know, me and my brothers, we were never looking for this kind of stuff. I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy.
It's so, definitely more accessible.
Right?
I mean, when I was a kid, it was impossible to find unless you went to there was
like an X-rated store or something,
well,
right?
Well, there was an X-rated movie house in Stamford called the Art Cine. That's what it was called, and that was the only place where you were going to find it.
Right.
Now you get it in the comfort of your own home. You get it. I could get it on my cell phone right now if I wanted to.
Right.
You know. I'm sorry, Stephanie. We're talking like you're not here.
Oh no. Yeah. No. But that's the whole idea, that it's accessible to everyone anywhere. And so, you know, realistically, if you don't teach your kids about these things, about porn, about sexual health, about access to reproductive health, et cetera, that someone else will. And so the question is, who will that someone else be? You know, will it be a friend? Will it be a parent? Or will it be, you know, the porn industry? And that sounds really dramatic, but it's true. And the first question we have, like when I'm in a classroom, the first question I ask when we're in our groups doing a presentation is, where do we learn about sex? And the majority of them are like, friends, parents, and then are like, oh, I don't want to say it. And it's like, why don't we want to say it? Because, and then the kids are like, porn, and then giggles. But it's true. And then we dive into that and really kind of talk about porn literacy and breaking it down. But the question is, it's there, it's out there, it's just like any other, you know, consumption or addiction or substance. It's there, and it's influencing the mental health and the relationships of our kids. So why don't we want to prevent those things from happening?
Yeah, that's wow. It really is such a deep conversation. Stephanie Swantek with the Bridges Healthcare Milford. She is the Be Safe Project Manager. Thank you for tackling this. I know it's certainly not an easy topic for adults to even talk about, let alone sit there with their preteens and talk about this. If people want to reach out to you, they want information, they want to learn how they can have these open conversations with their kids, where can they go to find you?
Yes. So again, I work at Bridges Healthcare in Milford. My email is swantech@milfordbridges.org. Or you can always just call Bridges Healthcare in Milford and ask for me, Stephanie Swantek, and I will be sure to connect with you. And if I can just, my last kind of advice is just, even for parents, is just constantly encourage your kids to take breaks from the phone, take breaks from screen time, because taking a break eliminates their access or decreases their access to these other influencers.
All right. Sounds good, Stephanie. Thank you so very much for taking a few minutes, and we'll talk to you next time.
Sounds great. Have a great day.